Can everybody hear me now?
Okay. So we'll start a little bit early, because I think whoever wants to be here is probably here. Anybody here been to the Internet Wars Palo 2006? Not too many people, but okay. I guess we don't maintain our audience.
Ooh.
So the idea was to bring up a few slides and talk about things we have seen the past year, and then just open the mic to everybody to talk. Can we actually arrange for a mic for everybody so they can ask questions? This will be most of the session. Is that possible? No microphones? Can we take one from the table? Yeah. Over there?
Would you like to do a meet?
No, no, this one. Over here.
That one has long cords.
So we can just pull. Okay, the first guy was.
Queue up down in front here.
Yeah, if you have a question or something. So this year we decided to skip on the actual presentation because I don't know when to shut up, and if I lecture, it just takes a long, long time for me to do so. And just start with questions from the audience. We had a lot of interesting things happening this year. We had the what did we have this year? Well, we had the Estonian information warfare thing going on with Russia, or not Russia. Russians. I'm actually lecturing about that later, but never mind. And that's not the main thing we want to talk about. We want to talk about the mafia. We want to talk about the general phishing, fraud, botnets, DDoS, all the bad stuff, e-crime, whatever you want to call it that's happening online. We have people on the table that can answer very, very technical questions about malware samples, vulnerabilities, etc. People can answer very general questions about incident response and how things are managed with global task forces. And, for example, when we had malware on the Dolphin Stadium website 2 days on Friday, 2 days before the Super Bowl, how that was taken care of and how cooperation globally was managed. And we have people from law enforcement here who can answer questions from their side of things. So everybody has beer except for the feds? Good. So I'll let just everybody introduce themselves. Please, 5 words.
Let's see, George Bakos, Northrop Grumman, formerly Dartmouth ISTS, incident handler at the Storm Center.
Tim Kasiba with the FBI.
Joe Stewart, SecureWorks, formerly Lurk.
Rick Wesson, Support Intelligence.
Andrew Freed, Special Agent, Treasury Department.
IRS.
Mark Sox, Director of the Internet Storm Center.
So, unless you want me to talk forever, which I'm more than capable of doing, do you guys have any questions you would like to start us off with? Yes, please step up and take the mic.
So I assume you guys heard about the ISP who started redirecting connections to a particular IRC server to a kind of dummy server that would try to rid the whoever connects. Yes, Cox, thank you.
Go ahead,
what are your opinions on that?
I would actually like just one of you to answer that because although related to botnets, it's not internet wars. It's response. So who would like to take that? Rick?
I had a fun perspective from this. What we support intelligence tracks and aggregates data about malicious activity. And so one of the things that we tried to understand is we looked at Cox's network before they did this and Cox's network after they had done this. And we didn't notice a statistically significant growth.
Eat the mic, please.
We didn't notice a statistically significant decline in botnet activity from their network. So, you know, what it was doing was having people connect to a server that issued 5 or 6 different commands that sometimes removed malware from infected machines. So from the outside perspective, we can't tell that there was actually any positive effect.
Mark, would you like to actually comment about why you think they did it and if it's a good idea or a bad idea to the approach itself, not the
technology? Yeah, so just in who asked the question? So you know what they did, right? So Cox took any DNS queries, it looked like they were going to CNCs, and they just redirect them. A lot of consternation over whether that's an appropriate thing for an ISP to do. Right, exactly. So from a business perspective, it makes perfect sense. It's their networks. You don't like Cox, go to Verizon. I mean, just, you know, switch, right? But from a let's keep the internet pure, it's designed to do the things that we wanted to do, you know, bad Cox. It's like VeriSign when they did SiteFinder a few years ago. Did it make the bots go away? No. Did it make Cox's networks a little cleaner? Perhaps. I mean, not much. Is that what you're saying, right? So, I think it's the type of business reactions we're going to see in the years that come. The internet's run by businesses. It's not an academic thing anymore. It's a business venture. Consumers vote with their wallet. If you don't like the way your ISP is performing, find another one. Now you sell your house, move to another neighborhood. That's what we all do anyway, right?
Well, one second, George.
Yeah, one comment. How did you find out that Cox was doing this? I mean, we knew it for many reasons, but how did you find out personally?
Slashdot.
Was anyone contacted by Cox to tell you that, you know, as a customer, we're going to protect you by taking these additional steps? I don't want to pay a vendor for a service unless I know exactly how they're changing my requests. Rather than a that's arguable. Is Jennifer here?
Well, they're publishing anyway. You're pulling your DNS service from them, and you can point your DNSs at anybody. Who runs anybody here from OpenDNS? You guys familiar with OpenDNS? All right, check out OpenDNS. If you go to them, you don't have the Cox problem. You're completely redirected.
But guys, I'd actually like to take this question, mush it around, and bring it something I want to do. We always argue about ISPs not doing enough, and the ISPs argue, well, why should we? Not because there are bad people that are trying, but it's not our job, etc. And there is, on the extreme end, the regulation, and the other extreme end, there is free internet, don't be the internet's firewall. Do you believe, I mean, we know for spam, you have to maintain your systems, you have to filter. What do you believe would actually work for ISPs to implement as part of the system? What do you believe works right now that ISPs can implement to maintain their systems and combat this problem? Let's start with Mark.
Egress filtering. Nothing leaves the ISP unless
the basics.
Properly sourced. Basics, yeah. If they would just do the basics, yeah.
If ISPs were to globally deploy devices that adhered to BCP 38, that would help a lot.
I mean, that's something that everybody can do today. Basics.
Who is that over there clapping?
Another IETF or in the...
Who is that? What's your name?
Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Everybody together. 3, 2, 1.
Hi, Joe.
But Joe is right, because those of you not in the ISP world, BCP 38 has been sitting there for how long now and not really implemented? Okay, let's move on to the... Unless somebody wants to chime in here. Let's move to another question. Yes.
This is going to be a real vague question. I've heard good arguments on both sides of net neutrality, good or bad thing.
Not relevant. Next. I'm really sorry. No, hold on. I apologize to you, but that's politics. We talk operations. So I apologize personally. I'm the evil guy, not them. I'm the asshole, okay? Another question, please. Yes.
How long do you think it's going to be before we start seeing ISPs do, instead of the DNS poisoning stuff, start doing things with like BGB table manipulation, dropping routes for things they consider hostile?
I think they're already doing it now. Yeah.
Can we rephrase this question so that we won't fall into the political pitfalls, because it is actually interesting?
Okay.
Go back to the mic. He has EFF on his back. I'm worried.
Okay, how do I deal with ISPs that are doing this to me without my knowledge?
Create your own DNS server and use it.
Not DNS, no, BGP.
Create your own ISP.
There's a number of services, companies that are actually selling services to corporations, and how they manage it is injecting, you know, 32s or larger to null route inside the core of their networks. It's no different to do that for a corporation than it is for an
ISP. Believe what he's afraid of is, yes, okay, let's say, and we're not opening that argument, that this is necessary. We need to filter somehow to maintain the network, security, whatever else. How does he know this won't be abused? So I changed the question then to actually ask, what's currently done that he wouldn't like? If that makes any sense. What's currently done by ISPs, for example, to maintain their networks, to fight the bad guys, to somehow survive, that he really wouldn't like to be abused? Is that right? Am I? Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I think that there's two things that ISPs have done. One is walled gardens, where they put a device's MAC address into a different pool, so they get a different IP address that has different policy restrictions on the outbound ports. Another one is Trend offers a device which they sell to Trend Micro offers a device which does this BGP routing inside the core of the network, which would it does a number of things, but it essentially inserts information using BGP, which doesn't affect the external view of how a BGP routing occurs. And so I don't think that it's really an issue from a policy perspective on what's going on inside the core of a network. I think it's falling within their right.
I would like to move on at this point and reconcentrate on a different aspect. We know the ISPs need to protect themselves or us or maybe not, but what are they actually protecting us against? So I'd actually like to go to Joe Stewart here and ask him about some of the recent stuff we have seen, which we haven't been able to handle, or the more edgy stuff that we need to handle right now. From the malicious code perspective, what's actually disturbing us? What are the actual malware samples that impact the internet when they infect you and stuff like that? Did you even understand what I was saying?
Sure. you know, from the perspective of impacting the entire internet as a whole, you know, we don't see as much of the global worms and things like that because people have deployed different countermeasures, and you know, everybody's got an anti-worm product now, and the bad guys figured that out. So they've solely gone to targeting the end users through drive-by downloads. So you know, it's a mess out there. If you're talking about, you know, your grandma, you know, your mom or your dad, you know, surfing the internet, trying to just, you know, go a few pages and maybe do their banking online. It's a mess for them. You know, does it affect the internet as a whole? You know, not really. I mean, we don't see it on an operational level, but still, it's just a massive wave of this type of activity. And that's the thing that I'm seeing and trying to deal with in my operations.
Massive wave.
How do you quantify just the you know, endless torrent of these types of MPAC and, you know, malicious JavaScript hacking, you know, thousands of sites at once? You know, over, you had the Italian job that they called it, where, you know, they just had a field day, just, you know, infecting anybody that visited a site. Almost, you know, they got. You know, you think, well, I don't use Internet Explorer, so I'm safe. Well, that's not true anymore. You know, they're finding bugs in Firefox, albeit they get patched faster. But still, there's, you know, Flash has recent vulnerabilities. Java has some new vulnerabilities. So unless you're running without all that, you know, completely patched, and, you know, Windows Update doesn't do that for you, then you have problems. If you have maybe your Java is patched, well, unless you've removed all the old vulnerable versions of Java, the bad guys can script their pages so that they just instantiate the older version that's still on your hard drive and then infect that. So,
Well, Mark, I believe you, about a few months ago, we responded as a community, the Internet Security Operations Community, to the Dolphin Stadium incident, where suddenly all this stuff that's immense, but it's background noise to us, mm-hmm. happened. Then we were on a global conference call talking about, yeah, that's mitigated. Do we have anything more to do? No, let's go sleep. It's the weekend and stuff like that. And then you came up with a question. You went to Google mm-hmm. and searched for the malicious code, and you came up with a question. And I believe what you said can really emphasize the point of how large this all is.
Do you remember what the question was, or you want me to talk about what we did?
I'm trying to see if you remember it.
Yeah, I know it was a good one. Let's just talk about Dolphin real quick. Do you guys remember that? This was right before the Super Bowl back in early February, I guess first weekend in February. So we get at the Storm Center, we got a contact that said, hey, something's goofy with dolphinstadium.com. It's serving up a weird JavaScript. It's pointing to a site in China, downloading just a little piece of code, which then if you pull it into your browser, nothing patching here. Your browser's just executing Java code. Redirects it, pulls down another loader, pulls down a keystroke logger. I mean, the typical stuff that we're always seeing. What we did, though, at the Storm Center is we took those strings, what we were finding inside of Dolphin Stadium, and went to Google for them, just kind of playing around with Google Foo there. And we found close to 100 other sites that also had that same JavaScript in it. Started following some of them, and sure enough, it is pointing to the same Chinese sites. It's downloading the same piece of code. About a third of them, roughly, were hospital-type sites, which we thought this was a directed attack against hospitals. In the end, it turned out it was the use of Dreamweaver. People who were using Dreamweaver didn't, they had a little setting they were screwing up. These guys had abused it. But what really struck us as odd was the why, you know, what's going on, because there's always a motivation behind this, and usually it's a criminal financial type of thing. They're going after credit cards or stealing your identity. In this case, they were interested in World of Warcraft. That was the identities they were chasing. They wanted to get your World of Warcraft credentials so they could go in and mine some more gold. They have these gold farmers over in China that steal your virtual credentials, go in and then steal your virtual cash and then sell it in the virtual world. That blew us away. This is the first time we had seen the bad guys operating in the virtual world, now mapping it over to the real world and doing it through the DolphinStadium.com. So then we continued to pull the string, and it turned out this attack had been around since back in October. We hadn't even seen it, didn't even realize it was there. And the number of websites that, but now that we knew what to look for, increases over 1,000 or so that had been infected. And it just continues on. We've seen, you know, more things like that. Just very novel, real easy, and there's nothing that the user's doing wrong. You don't have an unpatched browser. You're doing nothing but just visiting websites and wind up pulling this trash into your computer.
There was actually something extra on that. I mean, yeah, that's cool, by the way. World of Warcraft
cool.
Gold, yeah. But interestingly, once we actually got the incident handled, I was on the phone and I said, guys, let's go to sleep. We're done. And Joe was talking about the malware and what it does. And then you came up with a question that I would like to really concentrate on. He said, hold on, Gotti. I just went to Google, and there is a ton of other websites out there doing the same thing.
Right.
How can you call this incident handled and shut the door? And that's what I'm trying to really... I mean, can anybody here try and explain why we all... I mean, we are on the stand talking about all these different incidents, and... we speak of them as background. You know, thousands of websites here, thousands of hacked users over there, millions over here. And, you know, that's just background noise. And I'm trying to find a way to explain why we only respond, for example, as a global community to Dolphin Stadium incidents or to other such large incidents. How can we explain this? Can you help me out? Rick, sorry.
We can't contact the people that are responsible for the resources. And as a company that's trying to find the people to educate, and the amount of education that has to go on is significant. We track some 2.2 million events a day, and I can't find all the people to give the information to so that they can go and do something with it. And the organizations are vast. I mean, you have universities that can do something. You have government that can do something. But you can't usually get it to the person that
will just get reinfected anyway if you could find them.
I can say one reason why we really keyed on Dolphin Stadium is it was the first time we'd seen the virtual world. Usually when something new comes up, it is background noise. There's millions of this crap going on right now as we speak. Something new, though, happens. We'll key on it and start talking about it. Once that newness has worn off, it's background noise. Are the bad guys getting in the virtual world today, right now as we speak? Yeah, they're doing it all the time, but it's background noise, at least to us at the Storm Center. You guys may not see it.
Yeah, we all try to basically respond to all of this. Andy. We all try to respond to all of this. I love to talk even when I'm moderate. We all try to respond to all of this. This is important. But remember, this is all goodwill-based. Yeah. How can we respond to millions, right? So before we speak, Andy, I would really like this to hear the FBI's perspective, because they really do a lot. The FBI has really advanced in these past few years on online crime and all that. Okay, this is DEFCON. I'm allowed to say this. Shit. And we still don't see a difference. As far as I'm concerned, we lost the war. So I'd really like our two law enforcement members to comment on this.
Well, first of all, from an FBI standpoint, the predicate behind the FBI getting involved is, first of all, a complaint. It's not that the FBI isn't proactive, but there has to, first of all, be a complaint. If there's not a complaint, then there's nothing. I think it was mentioned earlier, we're not just going to start calling people, mm-hmm. Unless certain things actually happen. So when you start, and then, of course, based on the complaint, once you actually get past the complaint, then we need to start talking about what minimal losses. Is there a minimal loss threshold that's been achieved before we're going to expend resources to go after whatever's occurred? So you have two things you have to immediately look at before you're going to start going down that road. And if there's no complaint, then if somebody didn't file a complaint with the field office, there's nothing to get started on. So somebody has to complain.
Anybody out there want to complain?
Andy. I think opened it up, right? So.
One of the side effects of this problem, you know, last year at the same session, I made the comment that like one out of every five machines were infected. Everybody took a gasp. And I think that that's probably almost a conservative number at this point. Mm-hmm. We're running into a problem is we recently have been going after some IRS phishing sites, which is nothing new. It's been a problem we've been dealing with since November of 2005. And in tracing back the source of the phishing site, we ended up executing a search warrant in Chicago 2 months ago. And, you know, just to really quickly summarize, this was a site that had not only access to phishing site, but also downloaded some of the captured financial data. So that's why we targeted this one site. This was one out of about 100 and some addresses we had. So we went into the house, we executed a search warrant, got the computer out, and when we started looking at it, we stopped counting if we found 104 viruses running on this machine. So not only does some of this noise type stuff cause problems for blips on the internet, it's causing real problems for us even trying to do real investigations because you basically lose any way of tracking anything at this point.
Let me also tell you how severe this problem is. A separate project that we're working on the side, and I'll give you the URL to this in a minute, piece of darknet space is picking up over 100 new infections per day. And this is not just little trashy stuff. It's the real mean, evil botnets. Connect back to Russia, download their eggs, execute it. Bad stuff. I'll give you the URL later. But we're finding inside of it just every day they're coming up with the coolest, neatest ways to continue these infections. For example, most of you understand about codecs, C-O-D-E-C. In other words, you go to some website, video won't play. It'll pop up a little thing that says, we don't know how to do this. Do you want to install your own codec? Do you want to let Microsoft help you? Do you, et cetera. What do most users do?
You want to let Clippy help you.
Let's let Microsoft help me, right? So your browser takes you off to codecs.microsoft.com, which is where the stuff sits, or activex.microsoft.com if it's a ActiveX control that's missing. The bad guys have figured out how to use this. So they'll register malware with Microsoft. They'll register it as a codec. Your browser then redirects to get the codec. Microsoft points you off to some malware site, pulls it back as official Microsoft software, and now passes it over to you. You then install it because you think it's coming from Microsoft. But Microsoft has nothing to do with this. I'm not blaming them. They're just a little redirection here. But the user has no idea what's going on. They're just following some link. Some web page doesn't work. It's asking you to complete the little autocomplete box, and off they go. These little dark nets that we have out there that can find this stuff, it's picking up, again, over 100 per day of all this new stuff, and it's constantly changing day after day after day. And the guys in the antivirus world, they can't keep up with it. There's no way to publish signatures that fast in order for consumers to keep themselves properly protected.
You know, that's a good question. Are you waiting to ask something?
Yeah, I have a question specifically related
to... One second. I want to continue on this. What are your takes? I mean, this is a question we get all the time. Antiviruses, everybody uses them, or supposed to use them. I don't, but most people have antiviruses. It's the one security tool we know people use. What are your takes? What is your take on this? Do you believe the antivirus really helps out there, or should we just get rid of it?
Go for it, George.
Well, I've spoken to a fair number of webmasters, administrators, and owners of systems, end users, and more often than not necessarily in the word, but you can sense that they really don't care. I've had a number of people, especially one of the Dartmouth faculty and students, say, "So what?" when I inform them that their machine's been attacking things in the network. At the Storm Center, I contact a provider, and I'll get, "Oh, thanks very, very much. We'll take care of that." And they certainly don't for quite some time. Why not? Because it's not negatively impacting their business. I had a very good relationship with an upstream provider when I used to host aldas.org. Any defacement folks in here, any Zone Age people? Well, we got DOSed off the face of the earth, and we took them on just so we can collect information about the bad guys. And the upstream provider was very, very proactive with us in putting in place ways to manipulate BGP tables so that we would go away, but not the rest of his network, if and when, well, correction, when the attacks came downstream. And his CTO didn't get involved and start screaming at lawyers until after the DOS that came down the pipe was so big that it impacted not only us but other customers of theirs. But there was, up until then, a real lax attitude that I see providers, webmasters, administrators, end users. Now, is antivirus working? To a limited extent, until your license runs out and you don't feel like paying any money for it. And my nephew, I just cleaned his machine up, 50-some-odd pieces of spyware and malware. But it was okay because he could still get his papers in. Now, is there a symbiosis right now? Who in here can tell me they don't have any malware on their end user workstation?
You're
probably
lying.
About
really?
30%. About 30% of the room just said that. And
well, how many of them use Windows?
How many use Macs, right?
So then the rest of you, in some way, you're not freaking out. You're not calling the FBI. You're allowing this to exist. Now, maybe that's okay. Maybe we are going to approach a stasis. If we don't know where you have one.
Well, it's like your body. You've got all these parasites and stuff that are inside your bowels. It's helping process your food, but you don't care, right?
Andy?
I do now.
Andy? Yeah. Tell us about your...
I don't think that antivirus works very much anymore because we're seeing a very significant increase in the number of targeted viruses. And I know that, you know, there was a wave of viruses that were going out that were supposedly from the Big Better Business Bureau. And it was an RTF document you're supposed to download. And, you know, we saw that migrate now over to the IRS, which is how we got involved. Then it moved over to the Department of Justice. Then it moved back to the IRS again. And in every case, we saw about five or six variations. The first thing I do is I download everything, you know, using a Linux system because I don't use Windows systems, because I'd be owned in about an hour. And, you know, we run it through, you know, VirusTotal, and none of the antivirus engines picked it up. And I think that anybody that's under the illusion that antivirus will protect you is very, very mistaken. I think it will help, and it will take some noise off, but is not taking care of the targeted stuff. And I think it's even more interesting to see just how coordinated the bad guys have gotten. Would you like to talk about the storm? Because I think that's just
No, not yet, right now. We need to ask this question, but let's just do a yes or no. Can you guys confirm what basically has been seen even in the press? Are we actually seeing a huge increase of very much targeted attacks, sometimes with 0 days, going on up there?
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely.
So this is no longer myth.
Nope.
Let's go for the question. I'm really sorry you waited.
That's a problem.
This is actually a multi-part question. So
Go for it. You earned it.
I work in information security for a financial institution, and when A&I came out, there was a whole lot of customers that just got botted and they got completely owned. We started.
Did you use the dessert patch maybe? No?
No. He's never heard of Zert, sorry.
So, no, not us. It was our customer base. So our customer base, they're getting owned, and people are getting their credentials.
Right? Yeah.
And so we start to see anomalies, and we start to see lots of money leaving the organization. Internal processes are stopping it. We file complaints with the FBI. We ended up finding controlling servers that were hosting this, that were checking balances, that were delegating work to other bots that were actually moving the money and making the transactions, and nothing seemed to happen. The only place as a private company that we could go to was the federal government. We don't want to just put out a post on full disclosure, hey, I work for Bank XYZ, and guess what's happening to my customers. But in no offense, I don't know if you were busy fighting terrorists, but 3 days later, the server in D.C.
Hold on. Can we get that ooh in 3, 2, 1?
Nice.
But
wait,
3 days later, it's still online.
Not
our server. We found a controlling
your
server.
No.
This is just an anonymous server on the internet.
That's
checking balances for customers, and then after balances get to certain levels, other bots are from totally different geolocations are actually logging in and moving the money. We could tell it was very intelligent. The person that wrote it knew exactly what they were doing.
And used EtherCap to move that money to your bank account.
No, that was me.
I want to get on a soapbox for a second and tell you. The problem here is that your bank should be using passwords. That's the crux of the problem. That's
problem
what
solved.
I'm
sorry I didn't think of that.
Your friend didn't think of that.
My real question is, what can a private industry do when we don't want to get our name out there, but there's a problem that We didn't cause. It's affecting the customer base, and our internal security resources can provide a whole lot of information, but the federal government just doesn't seem to be doing anything
about it. Let me ask you a question. Actually, two very quick questions, and then I want the feds to answer, okay? One, your entire first question, aside for the amazing complexity of the attackers, okay, are you basically saying, we may do the best security, but the security of our clients sucks, so we get impacted? That's what you're saying?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, one second. Let's get to the second one, which actually we can answer. That was just a statement then. You asked, where can I go as a bank? So before we allow you to ask this question, because you really seem to be to know what you're talking about, it should be up here. Does your bank send email to its users?
No.
You're allowed to get the answer now. Unlike most of the banks in the United States of America that educate their users to use email. Let's start with Mark and go all the way.
That's a fair question that you guys need to answer. What happens when the private sector sits on really good actionable intelligence that they need to share with the government, but they can't? Due to information sharing restrictions or antitrust or whatever gets thrown
into the
lawyer.
Well, no, we did share it. We had agents come out. We gave them packet logs and everything.
But nothing happened.
We're involved in InfraGuard. But 3 days later, it's still going on. And, of course, we're blackholing them at the firewall. But it's still going on in this particular.
Were these domestic sites?
Domestic sites. The server was hosted in a colo space in D.C. I thought that, you know, maybe an agent could just walk over and pull the plug.
Ah. No. Kick the door in. Andy.
Well, unfortunately, I have a very targeted jurisdiction, which is the IRS. And I can tell you if it was an IRS box, I would have walked across the street, taken the box, and probably the router it was connected to as well. Dan, FBI.
Well, let me qualify.
Why'd I know that was coming?
Now, in the FBI's defense, I do believe the FBI is running several organizations, such as InfraGuard and a lot of websites to get people to talk to them and conferences. It's actually DHS. Let's be honest here. But what? Sorry, you were starting to talk.
Not really. I just said I knew that was coming. Well, I guess my question to you is, you said I just want to get the facts straight. So you said agents came out, made copies,
yes.
You shared it.
We gave them everything.
Okay, so the complaint was made.
Complaint was made.
Who was that complaint made to? A local field office?
Local field office. People that we have a relationship through. With
FBI
through
or Secret Service, by the way.
FBI.
Okay.
FBI. In Washington Field? You said D.C.
Well, I'm not saying where I'm from. The server was in D.C., but local, major city. And let me qualify it by saying
That's 56.
We prevented all the wire transfers or recalled all the wire transfers before there was an actual loss to us, but we still
filed
the complaint.
I want an account in your bank.
Seriously. Yeah.
So there was no loss.
Yeah, that's the thing. So at the end of the day, because our internal processes caught it, and in some cases we recalled wires before they hit the Fed processing deadline at the other bank and actually went overseas where we just lose track of the money, we ended up getting it all back, but that was us being a good security team, and with us giving this information to the FBI, there's other organizations that could have been impacted, and the servers that were actually performing this work, that were casing the accounts, waiting for balances, and performing the work and moving the money, they were still up, and they were still attempting to attack us.
Okay.
Days later.
So there was no loss initially. I'm not trying to discount the fact
Correct.
That there should
Officially,
have been activity.
At the end of the day, there
I'm
was
just
no
saying
loss.
That there was
we,
no loss.
We prevented it.
Right. You prevented the loss.
One second, please. One second.
The amount of
come
time
up here,
he spent
no,
prevent
seriously,
the
come
loss.
Up and stand beside him.
No.
But, no, okay.
But he has an excellent point because there was a loss. I mean, he was saying there wasn't a loss, but he has an actual excellent point because the time you spent to ensure there wasn't a loss is, in fact, a loss to your company. So when I bring up the fact, the idea of a loss, once a complaint has been established, when I bring up the idea of a loss, that includes any time you spent to prevent a loss or trace a loss, or you know, all the hours that went into getting that money back. So
my wife was pissed at me for a week.
Oh, I bet. All right. I don't know how to put that in the form of a dollar value.
But there may very
I can
well
probably
be.
Come up with a number.
No, but guys, we have seen these problems many times in the past. The FBI, for example, that really is doing an amazing job. I don't mind putting people down when I need to. This is a real problem. Maybe you can answer it in a better
question. Yeah, I guess part of the larger question is what does private industry
honestly,
do? Just call a field office?
Everybody will answer it over here, especially Mark. But you're really onto something here. Unless we can show a loss, and how do you show a loss from a botnet, right? How can we even report this? I mean, we want to complain. What's the process for us? What do we need to have before we go and file a complaint?
Well, you have the Internet Crime Complaint Center. You have the local field office. You have, and they're expanding that tremendously. So you have a method to be able to call a field office. Now, you also said that nothing was being done.
From what I could tell.
From what you could tell.
But the servers were still up days later.
Yes. And that was a very key point because, first of all, it takes time after that to go through whatever you turned over, okay, the amount of time it took to go. And if there's something that clearly is time-sensitive or whatever, they may actually elicit the help of you to help target where the issue is. But after that, it's still innocence until proven guilty. So you're not going to go in and pull the plug unless several other factors are met. And we're still talking about something right now where essentially there was no monetary loss other than the loss, and I don't know what that was quantified at. So now we have to get a warrant, swear out a warrant. U.S. attorney or assistant U.S. attorney has to be involved and has to want to do that, depending on the amount of loss that was attempted.
You guys
to be
don't
made
need
there.
Warrants. You got the Patriot Act.
Right? Bad comparison.
No, guys, as much as we are enjoying DEF CON, let's be serious for a second because he's giving him an answer, okay?
So, nice shot, though.
I'm sorry.
Not true.
I'm sorry. You're doing a good job.
But generally, the FBI looks at a broader perspective, and the pleasure that we oftentimes have is looking at, and I think Jim Finch tried to mention this during the Fed panel, they get to see from a perspective of 56 field offices from around the country that you're having this problem and somewhere in Podunk, USA is having the same problem, and you get to be able to put it together, and it may be transferred to another field office, or it happens daily, hourly sometimes, every day. So I don't think it's fair to say they weren't doing anything. The other thing is they don't have a responsibility to come back to you and say what they're doing. And I understand the perception here that generally sometimes you say the FBI is not doing anything. That's a valid complaint, essentially, because you don't get to see what happens. Are we perfect at it? Would it be a good idea to maybe come back and tell you step by step what we're doing to reassure? We can't do that. But we can come out here today and tell you crimes like that essentially are in the top three, especially if it involves the infrastructure. And it sounds like a cliche answer after saying that standing up here, but it really is an answer. I mean, we try to expend every amount of resources, and we're getting additional resources to be able to do that because there clearly is a concerted attack on our infrastructure and the vulnerabilities. But I commend you for the efforts that you went through to protect your own bank, and we're hoping for that level of cooperation, certainly from what you folks do. And the talent that I've come across here humbles me. And you guys you are that first line, and the federal government is going to depend upon you to do that job. And maybe we can do a better job to help you help us in turning over that information and keeping the integrity of that data pure enough to be able to enter into court later should it come to a trial of some sort. But that's a tremendous role that you all play, and I think you're minimizing to a certain extent the role that you all have in reaching a certain point, because we really are bound, contrary to the little shot across my bow about the Patriot Act, we really are bound by probable cause and being able to swear out a warrant. We do never take it lightly to be able to go into a business or someone's house, or Congress for that matter. And you can see all the crap that started. So it really is a serious issue. And we mentioned it earlier this morning. We all believe in those liberties as much as you do. And when you invade someone's privacy, there's a big issue there. And so we have to prove certain things. And there's that's oftentimes not very easy to do, and judges are just as skeptical as most people in this room.
There's also an awful lot of that stuff out there, too. I mean, we have a limited number of resources.
Yes.
And the FBI has put forth, and all kidding aside, I mean, the FBI probably has more resources, you know, per capita of cyber investigators than any other agency anywhere. I'm working in a couple cases right now, and when I'm involved in botnet, and that's way beyond the resources of my agency, the first thing I did was reached out to the FBI because they have that those resources. So.
And there's a botnet law enforcement portal, botnet conferences. There's one next week or the following week. I've been to the one in France last time. I mean, there's tremendous resources going into it. We're very aware of the issues associated with botnets.
Is there anything private industry can do to expedite that portion of your job that you just talked about? So once the complaint's made, it help gathering information or getting you in touch with customers that were personally owned or personally impacted? What can private industry do to expedite that process?
You're the moderator. You're far better at it than me.
Yeah.
Come on.
No. No, and I'm getting the impression that people are very...
Yeah! Come on. New moderator.
So we need some new questions.
It's my first duty as moderator. Everyone come hear my talk tomorrow on hacking online banking. I'm Brendan.
Don't go anywhere. You got a question.
Kind of going back to antivirus and whether or not they're useful anymore, I guess you were talking about that darknet site that is finding uncovering hundreds of these. I guess your average home user, you know, does a Google search, check their email, maybe check their online bank account. How long are you seeing from these darknet sites where they release this stuff to where it gets to the point where it infects your average home user? And do you think that the antivirus companies are doing a good job of... of kind of keeping up with that, or do they try? I don't know.
Okay, let's answer the first part first. At the Storm Center, we've been running everybody's familiar with DShield, a trust, right? So those of you who are submitting your DShield logs, very helpful. Thank you, and I appreciate it. What that shows, though, we can go in and see how long it takes for an infection to infect somebody. And we've done this for about 3-4 years now. The average is a little less than 20 minutes. So across the internet, on average ISP, a little under 20 minutes from when you plug into when you're going to get hit with some malware, just directed to your home router. Does that mean you get infected in less than 20 minutes? Not necessarily. That's an average, okay? So some ISPs will be 20 hours, some will be 20 seconds. It's, you know, hard to tell where it's coming from. But the number keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter in terms of the amount of time. This is the amount of time between different unsolicited flows, hostile flows coming at any given IP address out on the internet. That's somewhat scary, that the internet has gotten so hostile that all you do is just connect to it. And you guys have all tried this. Just hook a naked machine up to the internet, sit back and watch, and it'll get owned. I mean, you don't have to do anything. Just now, if you're a little more interactive, it goes a lot faster. Surf a few websites and just, you know, infect yourself silly. But the time is getting shorter and shorter. And even for Mac users, while at the time may be real wide right now, you're still receiving the love. Even the love doesn't realize what you've got on the other end of it. All you got to do is click on the wrong link, and you're off and running. Great question, though.
Yeah, I've got one thing to add to that, Mark. I run this set of scripts called Tiny Honeypot, and when I was on dial-up for the longest time, I had a dial-up, for God's sakes. I'm in Podunk, Vermont, sheep country, and on a dial-up, not even 56K connection, it was 20-some-odd K. I was getting about 7,000 content-carrying attacks launched against my box per day on dial-up. How many folks have got broadband persistent connections right now? You're seeing this stuff.
Everybody want to clap for Dan Kaminsky, who's far too important to be here on time. He's not drunk enough.
Well, there was beer here, so I
had beer.
So I actually did want to comment on one thing about the 20-minute attack. Yes, you are attacked about every 20 minutes. It's been like 3 or 4 years since most of those attacks have worked. And so it's actually really interesting. We get two things from that. First, security has advanced to the point we actually have a win under our belt. Every single one of you in this room, for the most part, you're not going to be vulnerable if you plug in the box. You'll get attacked. You're not going to get owned.
Where are the attacks coming from?
The attacks are coming from everywhere, but that's the interesting thing. They're owned. That's what's so crazy. There apparently are enough machines out there that are still unpatched and still ancient that even though all of us are probably going to be fine, the attackers are losing nothing by making these huge floods. So machines are getting owned, but they're probably not getting owned by the same things that are causing these traffics to spike out. And that's where we're getting into, like, we have a lot of multi-layer attacks going on. Frankly, everything seems to have moved to the web.
How many does it take to ruin the internet? How many old machines?
Oh, sorry, I get to ask a question now. How many owned machines does it take to ruin the internet for everyone?
200.
Mine.
Unless you have something really cool going on, if you only want to do it very well, stupidly, 200.
Actually,
the internet is not going to die tomorrow. I don't want anybody quoting me on that. Oh my God.
Mm.
If in 2004, everybody remembers Sasser, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Microsoft released the vulnerabilities for Sasser, the day before that, Cisco released a very nice little vulnerability about TCP resets for routers. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if the payload in Sasser would have included a little bit of Cisco TCP reset in there, just aimed at the core,
mm-hmm.
200 machines could have had a field day. Who wrote Sasser? What the hell?
Can you imagine if that actually worked?
Moderator, you need to take over. You need to cut people off. I mean, you're good at this. You just need to learn how to do it. Don't talk as much. No, you need to do what I do, just not talk as much.
All right.
So take over. There are questions here.
Question.
Nice. Well done.
Welcome.
I wanted to come back to what the FBI was talking about, how the distribution of the field offices allows you to kind of correlate and see one thing in another play, you know, see patterns emerge. I mean, in a way, it sounds like it's what ISC does in terms of the, you know, actual raw data. You know, do you guys talk? I mean, it seems like the FBI field office, you know, if you're going by what people report, it's going to be what's most notable, and you might miss larger patterns. So how do you kind of bridge the notable to the technical reality of what's going on underneath?
We have a great infrastructure within the FBI to talk through VTC and conference calls, and that's come a long way in the last couple of years. I don't exactly know the hierarchy of how it gets up where it is, but communication obviously is key. I'm sorry Jim Finch couldn't stay today. He would have been the ideal person, but he really did. This was an eye-opening experience for him, a tremendously eye-opening experience, and he went back with just a tremendous attitude, and he's immediately going to make some changes from a cyber division standpoint. Many of you, I'll give you an example, and I'm not trying to divert from your question, but
well, we got a few minutes left and two more questions.
Okay. Good point.
That's a good moderator.
But right. Actually, that's a very good way to tell him to.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
We actually have unlimited time, kinda.
But we were made aware of an email, an InfraGuard email that came out yesterday, that came up to him, and he's immediately going to demand a response, an apologetic response. So that's the type of attitude he's taking. But there's many different avenues of how things get reported. And it's a hierarchy that can somewhat be very complex. That's oftentimes it's basically broken down into good communication and then supervisors and SACs and ASACs in the field pretty much know exactly how to get that to the right level. But again, it's all these different issues involving what the assistant U.S. attorneys are doing and minimum thresholds and what the complaint is. And so there's not an easy, quick answer for that question.
Next question. You can't ask unless the moderator tells him to.
Yeah,
We know there's a lot of users out there that think multi-factor authentication is a username and a password.
That's true.
Right, both factors, yeah. You know, E-Trade's had RSA token, you know, their thing for a while. PayPal just instituted that. There are tons of banks out there, high-value targets, right? They don't do multi-factor authentication. What do you think we can
do? See my talk tomorrow. It's on just that.
Yeah, what do you think we can do to get banks to actually, and other high-value targets, to actually institute something like that or OpenID?
Move your bank account to those that do it.
That's an excellent point. I think you folks are there that can help educate, just much like we try to educate the management within the Bureau. You can educate your corporate officers and your supervisors and the importance, but that's an excellent point. I mean, go to a bank that does do it, and once it hits their bottom line, then they'll realize that this is what their public or their customers want, is more security.
That's the answer. It has to hit the bank in the wallet,
right,
or the customer in the wallet, because
right
now it's not. The industry is regulating, and the regulation does absolutely nothing.
I would actually add to that. We can look at Great Britain, or maybe even Australia, Canada. They do an amazing job of cooperating on security in the banking industry. In the States, they have a lot of cooperation, too. I'm not saying no. But in the States, you actually compete on security when you know, absolutely know, that whether it's another country or another bank, it goes around in a circle and will come back at you. So the first thing I would say banks need to do is understand this is a shared problem, a shared history of problems to be considered in your risk assessment, not just your history, and simply cooperate. That'll be the first step, in my opinion.
Well, a depressing number of the online banks can't even get SSL right.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So I do think it's important to realize something that doesn't come up in the security realm often, which is usability. You know, you take the number of people who can understand how to program, and then a small number of them understand security, and then a really, really small number of them understand security and usability. In order to get better authentication to be something that people actually use, it kind of needs to be usable. And so there's a lot of energy going on out there to create the next big authentication mechanisms, and I think who's going to win is who makes the most usable and useful system. It's just our job as security people to make sure, you know, it doesn't suck.
Next question.
All right, so some of you guys have mentioned that a lot of the exploits are starting to move to just almost all client sides, and we're not seeing, like, these big internet-scale events like SQL Slammer or stuff like that. Yeah, their worms are gone, and these just, like, super major events don't happen anymore.
They happen. They just happen client-side.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is that, that's kind of what I'm wondering about, I guess, is that since you're not seeing this big automated spread that shows up in as big traffic spikes and all that kind of stuff, I mean, how is that impacting your all of your kind of understanding of the current landscape, and how are you discovering these, you know, the new client sites that are starting to be real big problems?
Joe, you're best for this.
Sure. So it's moved away from the scanning activity and stuff like that DShield was really useful for about 3 years ago, and I almost never go to DShield now. I'm sorry, Marcus.
Thank you.
It's not on my radar anymore. Everything that we're looking at now is coming from users reporting infected websites. It's coming from Honey clients. You know, people need to start deploying more of these systems so that we can catch these infected websites and figure out, you know, what's going on and how large the scale is. Because right now, you know, we see it crop up and we say, okay, we can go search Google and we find out how many other sites are infected. But it's just crazy how well they can hide these things and yet how many users they can infect before anybody actually finds out about it. I mean, every day, I mean, we turn around and we find stolen data caches in our monitoring, and we find, you know, anywhere from 1,000 to 50,000 users, you know, that they might infect, and this is just over the course of a few weeks. So it's very easy for them to just fly under the radar like this. So, yeah, the Honey client type of technology, I think, is the next big thing in terms of detecting this. And I hope DShield has something in the works for
that.
Well,
here's what we do. DShield is IP port-based. It's going to be technical, nothing we can do about that. There's always still that background radiation. It's interesting. But what's really helped us is the human intrusion detection. In other words, system administrators, users that see something's wrong, they don't understand it, a piece of malware that shows up, and they call and tell, or send us a note and tell us. So that level, it's taking malware, which is now more of a psychological approach. It's not attacking your machine at the machine level. It's attacking users who can do stupid user tricks. Those users, through their system administrators, are alerting us. So it's almost like a layer 8 type of detection versus a layer 2, 3, 4 detection. So we have to change the way we do things because the types of attacks are changed also.
Unfortunately, that it usually takes a few weeks for it to trickle down before they discover exactly what's going on, figure it out, and get somebody technical enough involved to look at it and say, oh, well, we need to report this to somebody who knows it.
But with the targeted attacks also, it's not internet-wide. And so things tend to be a little more focused, a little
Not just targeted attacks, actually, 0 days. Everybody has been saying things that have become buzzwords right now, such as Wednesday, 0 day Wednesday or 0 day Friday and stuff like that. And what we've actually seen, and Mark can probably continue this better, is that this is really ROI related. It will be released on a Friday after Patch Tuesday, but only if the ROI requires it. They will not waste a 0 day. Mark, you can probably say more.
I mean, the whole thing is business related. Are there any bad guys in the audience? Anybody writing malware? I mean, no kidding. It's why would you release malware today other than to profit from it?
Joe,
it's academic, right? I mean, that's fun, but
Mark,
it's
Joe, you're both in Zert, right? And Zert showed up because of all this. Can you elaborate a little bit on this, Joe?
Sure. So when the 0 day attacks are coming out, we know that there's a window of opportunity for the bad guys that were, it's going to be out there plugging away, infecting everybody, and nobody's got a patch for it. So concerned individuals, came together with Gaddy and organized the Zert, and we're trying to delve into the finer bits of the code and try to figure out if we can release a patch in time to, save a few networks for people that want to use it. Some people don't, and I can understand that, but, we're trying to get out there and protect the internet, as best as we know how. We have, the skill, so we want to volunteer that.
Yeah, the last year, we've done one, right?
Three.
No. Just in the last 12 months.
Yeah, the last year.
Total of three since Zert started. And we, by the way, have been working closely with Microsoft on this because at first it upset them. Do you all know what Zert is? Does that hopefully ring some bells, right? So after WMF last year, this was 18 months ago roughly, the Windows Metafile problem, a team had already began to crank out this concept of can we issue a patch faster than Microsoft can, an unofficial patch. And so dropping the guy's name. Who was it that did the...
Ilfac,
yeah, of course. Issued the unofficial patch. Well, many people installed it, and it worked great. Microsoft and others complained, said, no, this is not official. Yeah, we don't warrant, etc. Well, the Zert kind of came out of that and said, there might be the opportunity that if there really is something fairly straightforward that fixes or at least temporarily patches, let's just put it out there, and it's your choice whether you use it or not. You make the business decision. How much is at risk financially should you get infected by the 0 day? Does it make a good financial decision to put in this temporary unofficial patch? Once Microsoft comes out with theirs, or whoever, and Microsoft, all three have been Microsoft, if I remember correctly, is that right? All three of ours have been Microsoft, right? I think, yeah.
All three of ours so far have been Microsoft, but we are not against Microsoft.
No, that's right. It's just the way it's worked, right? But as soon as they come out with theirs, the Zert patch disappears, and we push real hard to do the official patching. So the Zert function is alive and well. The 0 days, though, particularly with Office products, magically ended back in about February, March. Did you guys notice that? It's kind of been this drop-off in 0 days. Been some neat behind-the-scenes things happening, finding the groups that were writing the 0 days over in China. Guess where that, where that comes from. And working kind of behind the scenes to make that disappear. But there are lots of people you don't see at the table here that do the behind-the-scenes cleanup. Largely volunteer effort, some of it's corporate, trying to make the internet a safer place. I don't think it'd be even appropriate to put all these folks up on the stage because most of them don't want you to know who they are. But it's almost like the the cyber vigilantes that really
don't
are.
Use that
don't
word.
Use that term. Any
don't
press,
use the term vigilante.
Yeah. But the good guys.
No, this is really bad for us. We mean vigilante as in neighborhood watch because honestly, as much as we want the FBI, the IRS, everyone else to do this, change the economics, make a difference, put these guys behind bars, we need to protect our networks, maintain our livelihood on the internet while we wait. So we may in some cases actually be harming their efforts while we wait for them to do something, and they are doing a lot. Just, again, their resources and issues and things we can't see, In the meantime, we need to keep working on this. And Zert, for example, we have been, although this is, of course, one-directional, Microsoft has been very nice, though, we have been trying to share whatever we can and tell people, don't use our patches if you have a real patch out there.
Wrap it up, Gaddy.
You need to wrap it up. You're the moderator. I'll speak as much as I want. I'm in the panel now. One more question, though.
All right, this is a topic after the moderator's own heart. Back to the original question about banking assistance with Trojans and viruses and that, well, phishing, that sort of thing. In our experience, well, we learned several years ago that the feds were pretty useless at helping us for urgent problems. But now we do go to you guys, but when we actually request assistance is when we've done most of the legwork and we need help urgently. And then you get that, you know, you report it and several days go by. What's being done to actually help out in terms of getting things done urgently, given the legwork we're already doing to collect evidence and things like that?
I think Gary wants me to wrap it up.
Yeah, but who's the question to?
After this question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's the question to?
To the feds.
To the feds.
Specifically FBI.
So what's been done to more urgently respond to a request?
Yeah, given that we do most of the legwork ourselves in terms of collecting the information and attempting to get things shut down.
Well, one of the things, one of the methods that we use to come in and actually take the evidence from you or suspected evidence is a consensual warrant. So if a agent comes out, they're going to ask you to sign a consensual warrant. So at that point, we can take custody of what you've essentially taken, right? So a consensual warrant is you're giving us permission to – you own that. That's your data. You own that. So you're now giving us permission to take custody of it.
I'm just going to cut you off there. My point is, in our experience, a friendly call from a field agent to an ISP or a hosting company goes a long way and getting things shut down without requiring a warrant, and often that doesn't get done. You go through the whole legal process, which takes the time when you could have done the incident response work and made a phone call.
I don't understand the premise of the phone call, though.
As in, can you shut this server down? This is special agent, whatever your name is.
Or can you and take a say, look yes. at this
well,
server?
Yeah, and that happens traffic. A lot. I mean, they'll actually go out to the ISP or send a lead to another field office if it's halfway across the country and ask someone to go out and talk to this ISP. I mean, we're very proactive about having relationships with ISPs, especially major ISPs in major cities. So they'll send someone out to actually talk to that ISP. And generally, sometimes with a phone call, they will do that. Obviously, in the circumstance that you're talking about or a couple or many, I'm not sure, that obviously didn't happen. But I know that happens. I mean, we do shut them down or ask them to be shut down or taken offline or for whatever reason. We will do that. They'll issue F letters, preservation letters, you know, again, within the bounds of what we can to do, what we can do legally. Do those laws not need to be changed? Absolutely. The FBI does not change those laws.
So, all right, working within the IRS and phishing sites, I can tell you that there's been a big change in ISPs from 2005 to the current time. In the early days, it was sometimes difficult to get an ISP to shut a phishing site down. And I think pretty much worldwide, if I call an ISP and I say, listen, I'm with the government, we have a phishing site, it's hosted on your server, here's the URL, here's an email showing them from a .gov, will you help us by shutting it down? Generally, it's shut down within minutes. And I've done about 370 of them since 2005, and I think that's pretty easy. Now, getting the data afterwards isn't necessarily so easy.
I need to cut you off. Please don't audit me. We're going to do 30-second wrap-up here. So each speaker, 30-second closing statements, please.
Starting over there.
Okay. Ultimately, it's up to the users, the folks that actually depend upon these things and value their resources. So all I can say is to win the Internet war, every single person out there that values their stuff has to stop being a lamer. Apply BCPs, all right, egress filtering if you're a provider, keep yourself updated, be aware of what's going on, and just don't be a lamer, and they can't win.
Here, read his email to us.
Tell us what's on it. You have an incoming call from Riot.
Hey, what's up, Ash? You're burning your 30, Dan.
I'll just reemphasize quickly what I said before. You actually play a tremendous role. Don't minimize your role in what you do. Don't give up hope. There's a lot going on the federal side. Many of you don't see. Be proactive. Above all, be patient. Understand that we're sometimes as frustrated as you are, but we work within the bounds of what the laws allow us to do, and I know you appreciate that. Even though you think the Patriot Act may have expanded those capabilities in many respects, just as an example. But we're certainly very conscious of what those laws allow us to do, and sometimes that takes significant time. But hopefully what we try to emphasize here this weekend is not to minimize what your role is. The talent here, this
Five
has
seconds.
Just been, it's been an incredible experience for me. I must say, DEF CON rocks, and this has been awesome this weekend. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say that if you expect that the FBI is going to do incident response for you, you're going to be very disappointed. The thing is that other countries actually have CERT teams that actually do incident response and aren't just information clearinghouses. So I think
everybody,
really,
3, 2, 1. Ooh.
I think we could really use some pressure, I guess, on DHS to perhaps turn CERT into that and maybe pass a law that gives CERT the authority to go to ISPs and actually say, you've got malicious activity, take this IP down, because they can do that in other countries. You look at South Korea. They, by law, any ISP operating in South Korea has to conform to the CERT's demands if they detect malicious activity and report it to them. And so this is the role that people expect the FBI to take, but, you know, that's not what their role is.
Clean your own backyards.
Yeah, I think we have a long road to hoe. It's going to be at least 5 years, I think, before we are able to turn the tides on any of this. So it's going to get a lot worse, much worse, if the trends continue. And there's nothing that says that they won't stop. I'm a pessimist at this point because I haven't seen anything actually change the trend. And I'm ready to find something outside of the box because these things aren't working. And all the major attempts that we've seen were always beat. So I'm in a pretty sad state right now. There's a lot of work to be done. And
you sound sad.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it probably is all the beer from yesterday. It's just my hangover talking. So we're 5 years out, and my prediction is that this will be an issue for heads of state within 3 to 5 years. And it's already gone that high in Japan. So.
Yeah, I think my perception is that the financial crime is increasing exponentially. And I think that by next year, you'll refer to this as the good old days. I think short of getting little submarines under the ocean, clipping little wires, we're going to see a lot more problems. And I think that, you know, we're going to have to rely on you to assist us. We can't do it all. We don't have the records. We don't have the networks. The FBI can't do it all. Secret Service, who for whatever reason never seems to show up to DEF CON, you know, they do a lot of the banking stuff. They're not here. They can't do it all. IRS can't do it all. It's going to take a lot of work. But I'm sure 5 years from now we'll still be talking. There will still be an Internet. We'll still probably be working, doing something, although I'll probably be retired by then. But it'll continue.
Geography is dead. So all jurisdiction that guides law enforcement is based on the idea that most of the people that you interact with are geographically close to you. And as you get farther and farther away, there are more significant crimes, but less people you're interacting with. Now, all of us, we live in a world where geography is dead, but the old model of law enforcement continues. And when we even talk about up to the point of heads of state, states are geographical locations. We actually have a political and law enforcement system that does not interact accurately with the new threats that we're facing. And what I want to have everyone understand is that is why we don't get 24-hour response, like calling 911 on, you know, someone hacking you. You know what? They're in Malaysia. 911 doesn't do anything. So that's the problem that we have, and everyone should understand it.
So the internet continues to get worse, which it will. All of you who are security professionals will continue to profit, which
yes!
you will. There are many, many years of prosperity, ladies and gentlemen. Do not let the people outside of this conference know that, okay? Just make them think all is well. Okay, criminals dominate. We know that. Espionage is certainly on the rise. Everything on the internet has value. The bad guys know that. They're off to get it. You are valuable people. You have a valuable commodity, so be sure that you increase your value by staying in touch. Two websites, Internet Storm Center. You all know where it is. Make sure it's bookmarked, or it should be your homepage when it comes up. But,
bummer.
Yeah. But listen, there's one other thing, and I mentioned it earlier. That's that darknet. I want you to take a look at it. We put a diary out last Tuesday if you want to go read about it. But go to cyber-ta, cyber-ta.org. Take a look at that darknet. Look at the malware that's coming in, that 100 new infections per day. It will blow your mind. What you'll also find is all the source IPs where it's coming from. You'll find the DNS queries that it's doing. You'll find the malware itself, both packed and unpacked. You can look at the system call traces. You can see what all the evilware is doing just by clicking on some web links. If you would like to infect yourself, keep clicking. All the bad stuff's there. Infect yourself silly if that's what you like to do. Obviously, that's a bit of caution because there is evil on that website. So make sure you're running proper prophylactic measures. Otherwise, this is fun. I'm looking forward to drinking some beer with all y'all tonight. Have a nice evening. Gaddy, it's yours.
I'm going to try and do it in 10 seconds, otherwise it will be an hour. I'm actually an optimist. I believe there is a lot we can do. We know what we need to do. Tomorrow's trends... Shut up. Tomorrow's trends are things we're currently aware of but are not taking care of, which is kind of sad. And being an optimist, I can tell you, the current situation is completely lost. We are, in fact, in the losing position after World War II, meaning after World War I, I'm sorry. Our terms are right now, after we lost the war, are being dictated by the bad guys. Why am I still an optimist? Because people rise to the cause. And there are a lot of people in the room still sitting. And if you want to help, if you want to get together with this, you can. Because as much as the FBI is doing a lot of work, as much as Andy and the IRS, and everybody is doing a ton of work out there, what the fuck is going on with your cell phone already? Defcon, I say a lot of fuck. Okay. But seriously now.
It's a personal vibrator.
It's a personal vibrator, right. Okay. Right. Okay. So, seriousness for a second. You can get involved, really, because the FBI can investigate and try to turn the tide if they're given the power to do so, and recently they've been given more and more authority, policy-wise, to take care of this kind of stuff. They don't yet have the right... the big guys upstairs don't let them do their job yet, in my opinion, and we still need to take care of our own business. So get involved, take care of your networks first, then come join the Storm Center, and go to Bleeding Edge to work on Snort signatures, other stuff, work on Shadow Server, working with botnets, a lot of good stuff out there, and you can help. So this whole idea, all the questions we're trying to answer, all this misery we are giving to you by being on the front lines and seeing all of this shit, and I'm way past 10 seconds, is, guys, yes, we already lost the war to make the internet safe. It never was safe. It was an open environment, open to abuse to begin with. But it can be used safely if we work for it. Thank you.